Mini episode 967 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 967. We have a great guest with us here today. We've had a number of guests on previously from the comedy world here on a show where nothing is off topic. But I, Rick Morris, have really been looking forward to this one because we've had on two gentlemen previously who were part of the Howard Stern family in lesser roles than this gentleman here. This gentleman was obviously very central to it. A couple of great comedians we've had on previously, Pat Cooper and Gilbert Gottfried. This gentleman today, more or less, I would say, there at the beginning as far as the show really becoming an institution. That is what he is best known for, previous work out there on the comedy circuit and contributing a little bit as a joke writer as well to Rodney Dangerfield, all of which is chronicled in his outstanding book, The Joke Man Bow to Stern. And it was a really fun read and a really excellent read. And really, I have to say, deeper than I thought it was going to be going in. And I certainly mean that as a compliment. I could only be speaking of the comedy legend Jackie the Joke Man Martling. And Jackie, I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for being here today, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And after that wonderful heralding of my book, let me tell people, if you want to get one, to go right to the Amazon page, you go to Jackie the Joke Man. Like, it's all one word, JackieTheJokeMan.com. And the Amazon page comes up, and it's in hardcover and Kindle and an audible audiobook, and Artie Lang did the foreword, and he also did the foreword on the audio version. And I would love to hear from you by email. I answer all my own email, jokeland@AOL.com, jokeland@AOL.com. Get the book, read it, and then email me and tell me what you thought of it. All right, the commercial is over.
Well, you are famously very accessible to your fans, and I'm sure a lot of them are going to take you up on it. And again, I think a lot of them are going to find that it is a great read. I'd be surprised if not, all of them didn't believe that was the case. And as I kind of alluded to a little bit there, again, I didn't exactly know what to expect when I started reading it, because the nature of the beast, I've read books from comedians before. They tend a lot of times, even when you're turning to the memoirs, sometimes to be a little bit on the glib side. Of course, the joke man persona that you've perfected over the course of a number of decades is a fairly glib persona. It'd be hard to do all the fart jokes and everything otherwise, but it was a deep read. I really was impressed with it, and then right off the bat...
I'm glad to hear that. I get lots of emails every day from people saying it's kind of left-handed compliment. Wow, I enjoyed this book so much more than I thought I would, or I thought I'd enjoy it, but wow, you really blew me away. And that really makes your day, because, you know, I'm going to be writing a sequel, and it's fun that people dug it, you know?
Yes, and I was trying not to go for the backhanded compliment, so my apologies if that's what it came off as.
No, not backhanded. It wasn't backhanded at all, but, you know.
Oh, I know.
I appreciate somebody just reading it, you know?
It was...
Like, who the hell, my persona from the Stern Show, the last thing you'd think is this guy would write a decent memoir, you know?
It was, or that you would really want to, I guess. So it was a pleasant surprise. And then right off the bat, I mean, I think you kind of gave everybody an indication of the stuff to come here. I can honestly tell you, of all the things that I thought I was going to read when I picked up that book, I didn't think finding out that you were, in all likelihood, a distant relation of Teddy Roosevelt was going to be right up there. But right out of left field, Jackie, that was unbelievable. And to find that out...
And you know, the truth of it is, it's not really even a distant relationship. You know, he's my... If the rumor is true, he's my great-grandfather's brother, you know, half-brother.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather is Teddy Roosevelt's illegitimate half-brother, which which is just hysterical, you know.
It is.
But that's just fun. I'm sure one of these days I will finally get a hold of some DNA and we'll get to the bottom of it. But I thought it'd be a fun way to start things off, you know?
It was, and it really, I think it was smart on your part because it really kind of heralded what was to come and a lot of the substantive things that you were going to have to say in there. And there was one thing in particular that I was very curious about, and it might not be one of the more obvious areas, but something that I, as somebody who is primarily a writer myself, thought was very interesting, and that was about your mechanical engineering degree from Michigan State, because my sense is most people that are in the creative side of things here, like myself, you know, I've always been strong in writing, English, I was a journalism major, history and civics too. Math and science, I've nothing to write home about. And my sense is probably most people who do any type of writing are probably much the same. So that really kind of made me scratch my head about the mechanical engineering degree. You made a joke in the book there about a circle and kind of like, hey, here I am using my mechanical engineering degree. But, you know, I'm just curious about, have there been any ways that that skill set has actually helped you? And again, you're one of the most prolific comedy writers of all time.
The truth of it is I took mechanical engineering because I knew I needed a difficult major in college, mm-hmm. or else I would get drunk and flunk out.
Okay.
And my father had gone to school for engineering for a couple of years at Alabama, and I figured, well, I'll just do this because I was so good in math and science, and I was always, you know, in the excelled class and stuff like that, and I'm really glad I did it, but the truth is I'm not really a comedian. I'm a joke teller, and
sure.
The truth of that is that jokes are actually small problems. You know, you're given a little bit of information, and whether it's wacky or not, it leads to a solution. You know, so and my mind, I have a good mind, so that's how I'm able to remember all these jokes and plus link them to each other. But but there was never any intention on my part of doing anything with my engineering degree, but I didn't know what I was doing.
Okay.
I knew I was playing the guitar and getting laid, and I played the guitar until I was 31 and then realized I wasn't good enough. If I ever wanted to eat or buy a house, I better do something else. But of course, I stepped into an even slippery slope when I tried comedy. Like, I've been telling jokes my whole life, and then I put the jokes on stage as a comedian, and I never looked back. It worked. You know, the people liked it, then they liked it, then they liked it. And then the albums, I made homemade albums because I was good technically back in those days. You know, I learned how to make albums, and I made my own albums and sent them to Howard and wound up on the shelf. So the whole thing kind of logically progressed, but it was never like, oh, I can't get a job. It didn't even let me try to be creative. You know, I never knew what it was. I know I had a creative mind, but I had no idea which way it was going to go. To tell you the truth, I was drinking too much. I just would wake up in the morning and say, well, what are we going to do today, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's very interesting. But again, maybe you're being a little modest there. They don't just give out four-year engineering degrees from a major school like Michigan State. So you've got to be fairly strong in math science to get out of there with that. And that's one of the things that really kind of made me wonder, because most of us that do creative things are not as strong in math and science. But that was, as I expected, it would be a very interesting answer. But in terms of those years after you got out of there that you kind of alluded to.
Wait, let me tell you one other thing.
Go ahead.
When I graduated, I had a I didn't have a great grade point average, a great GPA, but I had a wonderful tech average, which is the average they take of your science classes and your math classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not just a mechanical engineer. I had a really, really excellent score, you know, graduating from school. So, yeah, it is pretty weird.
yeah, that kind of jumped out at me, that really was, I think probably atypical for a lot of people that are in the creative arts, whatever they might be, is to have that kind of a skill set. But one of the things, in those years after you got out of school, and you alluded to that with the band stuff and then segueing into comedy and the joke writing, I kind of had that part in mind when I got to the part of the book about the later years of the Stern Show, and when you were talking about the frustrations of wishing that you were part of the good and the bad financially and being invested in it. Like, if we lose affiliates, that should hit me in the pocketbook, but if we gain affiliates, that should help me. That it struck me that 70s stand-up culture, and we've talked about it on the show previously, We had a conversation with Richard Zoglin in his book about 70s stand-up comedy, which was really outstanding, of just what an entrepreneurial-type time it was and a lot of hustling and everything. Is that something that, those early days, that was kind of like hardwired into you as far as wanting to be, again, invested in things, that if it grew, you'd be a part of it?
I worked for myself. But I knew if I didn't get up in the morning and do something, nothing was going to get done. I didn't collect a paycheck, so I just worked. And the harder I worked, the better I did. You know, the harder I worked, the luckier I got. You know, you could say it was a total accident running into Howard Stern. You could say it was absolutely calculated. But yeah, we're all taught that, you know, if you work a little harder, you do a little better. You know, you get promoted. You know, and we were at a point where, like, I was, you know, third or fourth from the top, depending on who you ask. And yeah, I wanted to rise and fall with the success, which I guess, you know, they just did not see that. They did not see that the way I saw that. But, you know, it's like you don't want to go play baseball and have people tell you the score doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, you're there, you know, you're playing a game, and, you know, you want to. And I wasn't asking for half the money. I was saying, you know, like in The Godfather, let me wet my beak, you know.
Sure, absolutely.
But that didn't wind up being the whole negotiating thing, because early on, I gave up on trying to break through that wall, you
right.
know. Just like, hey, if we're doing great, you know, share the money. You know, and it's like any job, Rick, you know. I got a job working at McDonald's, and they pay me $5 an hour, and I say, look, I want to get $6 an hour. And they either give it to me or I go home. And it's, you know, it's that simple. It's just commerce. You know, I have the right to ask and they have the right to say no. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. And it might have played out in a little bit more dramatic fashion because of the nature of the industry. But you're right. At its heart, it's commerce. It's the things that we all go through every day. And, you know, the way that things expanded over the course of the show, where it ended up going from just radio in the 80s to breaking out into the TV show in the 90s as well, the Channel 9 show. That was something where, again, I wanted to ask about that, and there was so much wackiness you had a chance to get into there, whether it be a superhero school with Adam West or some of the other stuff. Do you have any particularly fond memories of what you got to do when you were thrown into that medium?
I just all of it. I can't even explain. Our lives were so crazy. We're doing radio 4 or 5 hours a day. And every week we had a blank sheet of paper and had to show up in Secaucus, New Jersey. And then by Friday, that blank sheet of paper had to be a one-hour show,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the can. And the pressure and the craziness, it was just, if you ever saw the movie like every year, that's exactly what it was. And one minute was funnier than the next, you know. Meeting celebrities and stuff, of course, was always fun. But, you know, dancing around all the rules and doing what you had to do, it was exquisite. The whole time, well, radio show and the Channel 9 show and being on the E! Channel and making the movie and then the CBS show in the late 90s. I mean, it was all, I look back, it was surreal. It really was surreal. I mean, Howard is just a genius that kept reinventing himself. And every time he did, we're just right there along with him, you know. You know, trying to support him as best we could, and it was amazing. You know, and just unfortunately at the end, I really think that I thought we all deserved more, but I was always digging me. I said, you know, I think a little bit more money would be appropriate. But there was lots of reasons. If you read my book, you know,
sure.
I mean, I was fried for a million different reasons, and you just draw a line in the sand. That's all. I drew a line in the sand for myself, and then I actually went against it. So it's all just one big blur. All I know is I came off the show, I quit drinking, and now it's 18 years later, and people come up to me and say, you know, you quit the Stern Show. I said, when was that?
It can't be that big of a blur, Jackie, but yeah. the very excellent.
That was great fun. You're in Cleveland?
Yes, based out of Cleveland.
That's so funny, you know, because we were broadcasting from there when the guy from the opposing station cut our wires. Do you remember
Oh, yeah.
that?
Yes, I do. I was listening at the time, Jackie. Yeah, that was amazing.
Right, and then Mel, the guy who was in charge of, you know, the guy that owned K-Rock, went and hired the guy that cut the wires. He said, anybody would hire the tiger that that's strong. I want a guy like that working for me.
Yeah, yeah, that was remarkable. And that was when the affiliates were starting to branch out all over the country. And something that I was very happy to see in the book get a decent amount of attention was, I was a guy that was a big fan on the Stern Show back in the day of Billy West, so I was glad to see him kind of get some play in there, because when you're looking at the chronology of that, for the bulk of us out there that really kind of feel like it took a south turn at some point, you know, I think it kind of culminated when you left, but there was a lot that was leading up to it, whether it be...
You know, Billy is still a very, very dear friend of mine.
Sure.
And he was just so talented and so wonderful, and that was the separate piece. You know, when we were really, really flying, I really wished there had been a camera in that studio that was trained on, you know, me and Fred and Billy when we were cooking with gas, you know.
Yeah.
Not just on us, but, I mean, on us, too. You know what I mean?
I remember those days.
Billy would do, he could do anything, literally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that was, I remember that so fondly from when he was on there. And, you know, wherever people start to mark whatever they feel like the downturn of it was, and I would say that I more or less subscribe to the chronology that Artie Lang has identified as far as where things kind of went awry in the later years and the way that Howard kind of changed how he went about stuff. But there's a chronology somewhere in there. I think it probably starts with Billy West leaving. It probably culminates with you leaving. In between, there was Private Parts of the movie. Howard starts to see that he can go Hollywood. Howard gets divorced. The second wife comes along. He sort of becomes, you know, Howard Hamptons at that point, if you want to call him that. But, yeah.
Once I was off the show, I just lost touch. I mean, I never listened to the show when I was on it. So people would come up to me and say, hey, how about this and how about that? And I'd be like, I honestly don't know, you know. And then people like, well, how could you not listen to that show? And I said, well, listen, I didn't listen when I was on it. I didn't listen when they had Best Of, you know, when we weren't there. And, you know, if the show's on and it sucks, I'll feel bad. And if the show's on and it's great, I'm going to feel worse. So why in hell would I listen? Not to mention, like, you know, I wasn't interested, you know.
Sure. No, that's only human on your part.
I mean, you know, people believe that now a lot more than they did 50, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, you're crazy. But, you know, that's me. You know, I never claimed to be normal, you know.
Well, you know, the book certainly obviously paints a very interesting picture, as we all knew it would be when we picked it up and started reading it. And the one thing in there that really kind of jumped out at me is, I don't know if this is sort of emblematic of the way that showbiz goes or not, and if it is, it's kind of a depressing thing to say about showbiz, but when you were chronicling in there the Rodney Dangerfield being on the show toward the end of in the last couple of years of when you were on the Stern Show there, and how you ended up sort of getting hammered for the whole, you know, selling jokes thing, when in actuality you had been, even if Rodney kind of tried to keep it on the down low, and that he was buying jokes from people, that you had been selling him jokes earlier. It almost looked like there was a commonality there in terms of your relationship with Rodney, your relationship with Howard. And when you're dealing with somebody in the business who is more powerful than you are and is basically the lead part of any kind of a partnership, that really, again, you know, you can hope to be treated fairly.
No, you know what? No, I got to stop you, because
sure.
The truth of it is, when Rodney came on the Stern Show, he was old. You
okay,
know,
sure.
His ship had sailed, and the truth is, he knew I wasn't making anything up.
Okay.
And the truth of it is, when he said, you know, if you read the book, you know, the whole idea of paying the, you know, in me paying him with jokes was his idea.
Yeah.
And him saying, I don't know anything about, you know, money for jokes or anything, I was not going to call him on it. You
sure.
know, I mean, he was so full of cocaine and booze and pot, and we had so much fun for the 2 weeks I was on the road with him, a couple other times I saw him. But I love him, and I still love him, and I was not about to ever throw him under the bus and say, Rodney, you were so high, you didn't even know what city you were in, you know. I took it on the chin, and I really, really didn't care. But he, you know, he's pretty good to people, and it was a completely different animal than Howard. He wasn't a guy who was trying to build some kind of empire. You know, he's just a guy doing his jokes, and that's always what he was, and never claimed to be anything more. He was just a delight. And, you know, and he knew they were making good radio when they started breaking my balls. You know, that's all it was good radio.
Okay.
But, of course, they never let me forget it. And I still get emails from people saying, hey, Jack, you know, why don't you sell me your shoes? I'll give you three jokes, you know. And meanwhile, 90% of the comedians in New York City had sold Rodney a joke for $50. It was
sure.
a common thing.
Sure.
Just nobody on the Stern Show was in that loop. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I'm glad you clarified that, because in reading that, it was obvious that, and maybe the bulk of it sort of came from how it was being dealt with on the show there, but it was obvious in reading it that it was kind of a hurtful episode to you, and the way that it was being willfully misinterpreted.
Well, you know, it really wasn't, because
okay.
I knew I wasn't trying to defend something that
okay.
wasn't, you know, it was ugly the way they ganged up.
Sure, that's what I meant.
Howard was leading the charge, and I knew that, you know, when you have truth on your side,
right?
You know, it's like, you know, it was crap, but it was fine. You know, of course, I'm sitting there squirming because, you know, the little guy inside me is saying, you know, just call Rodney a cokehead and tell him he doesn't remember anything. And I'm
Ooh.
Like, no, I'm not going there, you know.
Yeah. No, that was smart. Take the high road on it. I think people would applaud your decision there. And but what's very interesting about that is, because you talk about hearing it to this day, and again, one of the things that I did in preparation for this discussion here was I made what was probably the mistake of going on the Stern Reddit group and just kind of reading around about there and thoughts on your book, and I guess it pretty much was what you would predict that it would be. And I would say also, too, for a good friend of mine who I had spoken with, a contributor to our show, my good friend Bob Glassman, I think he subscribes to a lot of the same kind of stuff as well that you kind of see on the Reddit page and their version of history. So it was interesting to me because I thought that your book, for the people who have the one picture in their mind of the way that things went, and for anybody that believes the whole story of Jackie was greedy and bitter and whatever, like, I felt like you were telling your story but not going out of your way to sort of be defensive or anything like that. Like, you can believe me or not believe me, but this is the way that it went. So when you were writing it, in terms of your approach, how much hope did you have of reaching anybody that already had this picture in their head?
Truth of it, I didn't care.
Okay.
You know, it's like trying to reach Trump's people.
Yeah.
You know, what they've already made up their mind, they're not budging. You know, all I know is it was, you know, I've been writing that book as it went along for 20 years, you know, assembling my stories, and it's funny because I'll run into somebody, and well, now that the book's out, it's different, but people will come up and ask me questions, and I would answer them, and they'd say, man, that's what you said 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's what happened, you know, because the Howard changes a story every 5 minutes, and here I am, you know, the guy asked me something, I tell him the answer, and he's like, well, that's the whole idea. If you tell it, you know, Mark Twain said, if you tell the truth, you never have to remember anything.
Sure. Yeah, so, that's true. That's
and,
true.
Yeah, so I hope people would enjoy it. And it's so funny because I have so many smart friends that are like, wow, man, I love your writing. It's so accessible. I mean, it feels like you're right there. And then, you know, I see these reviews from these Sternites, you know, Jackie Martling's illiterate. He can't write a book. He should have got some help. And then other people said he didn't write this book himself. And you know that, you know, anybody gives a good review, must have been written by Jackie. You know, the attack dogs never stop.
Right.
But they never will. And they, you know, I mean, I got enough hard bark on me in those 15 years that, you know, what are they going to do? They're not going to penetrate me now. You know.
Right. No. Exactly. I mean, and anybody that. Of all the things that they could say, for anybody to say that it's not a literate book, they're just exposing their own stupidity, because it certainly is. It's a very insightful book about what it's been like to live your life. And in terms of taking a look at that and sort of going full circle on everything here, what I'm curious about is how much you've kind of worked out in your own head as far as whether these things sort of culminated on a subconscious level or not. But I was just really struck by this. The whole kind of thing, all at once, more or less, in terms of becoming sober, going through your divorce, leaving the Stern Show.
Well, now you know what they were? They were dominoes.
Okay.
It wasn't like I went into a different room of my house and wallpapered each room separately. It was like, you know, I my marriage had been over for years, but we were living together. You know, we loved each other, but we knew our marriage was over, but there was no time to go get the divorce. I was working 25 hours a day, And I knew I had to quit drinking, but there was no way I was going to quit drinking while I was still on the show, because I wasn't going to work that hard and then not be rewarded. And, you know, and I had just bought a house. You know, we had bought a house on the water, and I knew I'd move into it. So everything, that's just the way it happened. You know, it was not a calculated, I'll do this. It's just that's how it happened. And it was, you know, it was a rough ride for a few minutes, and that's fine, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you clarified that, because it was very interesting to read that and to sort of try to piece together what was happening in your head as you were going through these decisions. And you did, of course, say in the book how difficult it would be for you to have to address the divorce on the Stern Show, because, again, nobody on that show had the luxury of letting anything go under the radar. So I'm sure you were right in that regard.
I will never know how that would have been addressed, because the truth of it is, there were things that happened in my life that Howard completely let go under the radar. So who knows? But it wouldn't matter, because, you know, if I got divorced, it'd be, you know, the first phone call, hey, Jackie finally got rid of that witch. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And then they're off to the races, you know. So, you know, whenever people used to attack my wife, it was weird, because I couldn't put up a big fight, because then I would have got knocked down. So I had to do it with a wink and a smile, and then try and turn it on to Gary, you know. But that was the beauty of the show, you know. Anybody that got picked on, you know, Howard pick on somebody, but when they came at me, it'd be everybody would pile on, because they knew I could handle it. So I got Howard and Robin and Fred and Gary and John all in my face at once, but it was like I was like Bruce Lee in the middle with my karate chops, you know.
Well, that's the thing, too, and that, you know, I'll say this, that for any of the Jackie bashers, the Uber Stern fans out there, again, there's no better sign of somebody being secure in their own skin. How many among us, I know I certainly wouldn't, would embrace something like the Jackie puppet, which was just every day sort of cutting to the core of all these critiques about you, and you deflected it very well. I mean, there are very few, if any, of us
well,
that could have sat there.
I'm the reason that Jackie
yes.
puppet was there. I'm
yes.
sure you read that chapter.
Yes.
You know, my friend brought it over, and I said, well, look, well, I can't bring that in. Nobody will ever see it. So we finagled the whole thing, and it was great, you know, and it really was wonderful, you know, and to this day, people are still doing that stupid voice, and who cares? I love it, you know.
Yeah, that voice and that whole shtick was just unbelievable, and as you said in there, who could pull it off better than Billy West? Yeah, yet another of the great things.
I know. Hey, listen, let me tell people now, we've talked a while.
Yes.
Listen, if you have any questions about what we're talking about, just drop me a line. I'll answer you. Jack, jokeland@AOL.com. jokeland@AOL.com. Drop me an email. I'd love to hear from you. You don't want to yell at me. No matter what you want to do, I will answer you. And get my book at jackythejokeman.com. The Amazon page pops up. You know, I tell people, buy one and read it, and then, you know, wrap it up and give it to somebody else as a present. You know, there's a million ways to go.
That's right, Jackie. And let me jump in here and help with the plugs. Of course, at Jackie Martling on Twitter. The book, of course, again, is The Joke Man, Bow to Stern. And something that I didn't realize until the book came out, been around since 1979 and still going. Use your finger, 516-922-WINE, WINE. The joke line's still going, and as you said, jokeland.com, the hub where people can find all of this stuff, and again...
You know, Rick, I've written so much, I almost have a complete second book that did not make it into the book. Like the whole chapter about 516-922-WINE, use your finger, that chapter isn't in. The whole chapter about making the Private Parts movie isn't in there. That's just... I just couldn't fit everything, and I know that the sequel, I got so much for the sequel that people are going to go, you know, if they enjoyed the first one, you know, they'll certainly enjoy the second one, because it'll be the same thing, only completely different. You know, if you like reading about the Jackie puppet, then you're going to love reading about the real doll, you know what I mean, because they're individual stories, you know?
That's right. That gives us something to look forward to, but in the meantime, again, a tremendous book, The Joke Man, Bow to Stern, The Memoirs of the Great Jackie Martling. Jackie, the Joke Man Martling, thank you so much for being on the show today, sir. Please don't be a stranger. Love to have you back on over the course of time, and certainly when the next one comes out.
I will definitely take you up on that. Rick, please send me an email. Everybody send me an email, and enjoy Cleveland, and I'll see you in my dreams.
I will do that. Thank you so much, Jackie. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today for FDH Lounge mini episode number 967.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.